Cam, how are you?
Well, I'm all good, man.
Good.
As you know, because you were there, I'm now a married man.
You are.
Yes.
Now, I was going to start this whole podcast with a public congratulations,
Oh.
but not for that.
Okay.
For completing Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Oh, that was the biggest event that
A
happened
bigger
in the last
commitment
month.
of
Yes.
your life, let's face it.
No, it's funny. I was just saying to Dan before we started this, you were a celebrity at my own wedding.
I had
I
people
even
coming
had,
up to me, yeah.
we even had one of Becca's cousin's husband come up and said he listens to the podcast, which, well, hello, Nigel, to begin with, but also it's quite horrifying that like my new family, my wife's family, because I've listened to this because I've said some terrible things.
So have I, yeah.
Yeah. And he still wanted to meet you as
And Nigel
well.
was a very nice guy,
Yeah, super nice.
and all I could think of was, I've said, what really bad stuff have I said? But it's okay,
Yeah.
because most of it gets cut out.
We had some other reviews as well. Some people enjoyed it. Another one of my friends said that it should come with a public health warning because he almost fell asleep at the wheel.
That's true.
So
Another one of
all
your
in all, quite positive.
friends said that he listens to this, like the 2 minutes of banter at the start, and then turns it off.
Yeah, I think that's the same friend actually. He
Yeah.
gave that was his first review, and then he tried again, and then he said about that. So
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
yeah, but yeah, it was part of the reason why we have been a bit radio silent this year is because events have been leading up
Yeah.
to certain things, and we've also not been that good.
And it was a bit kind of weird to see you in your natural environment. In the wild. The
Oh.
wiles of Deal.
Really? What, getting married is my natural environment? Of the wilds of Deal,
the wiles of Deal,
yes.
which basically, so how can you answer me this question? So what's the population of Deal?
Well, I think it's around 20, 30,000.
Why are there so many pubs?
Because it's an old mining town, mate.
I'm
And those
surprised,
all those
and an old
miners.
smuggling town.
Yes.
I'm surprised you're not a raging alcoholic at this stage, because growing up in that town with sort of like two pubs per capita is mind-boggling.
Well, yeah, there are a lot more pubs now. It's become more trendy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was nice, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It was a really cool town, actually. Hopefully one day I'll return the favour. I'll take you to Manchester and show you where not to go.
Oh, whatever,
Don't go down that road. Don't go down
mate.
that road. Don't go down that
Yeah, I want to
road.
go to Moss Side. I've heard so much about it.
Yeah. There's a lot of places like that. I'll take you to the three good places.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, cool. Let's do it.
Anyway, you're listening to the Outer Colonies podcast. Welcome to the Outer Colonies podcast. My name is Dan,
And I'm Cam.
and today we're gonna do a little bit of a roundup of some more aged movies.
Yeah, so as anyone who listens to the Outer Colonies know, we haven't really done much this year. In fact, I think our first podcast, well, technically our first podcast was an introduction to the year preview, the Great Lost Podcast, as we call it.
May it rest in peace.
Where there are only an Endgame one, and there were a couple of like comic book superhero movies that came out that we should really touch on and just give a few thoughts, seeing as we've both been on long haul flights and managed to catch up on these movies.
Both of them, yeah, both of them quite recently on a plane. So this is Cam's preferred viewing method
Yeah.
of every movie, basically,
Okay.
with a massive engine next to him
Don't
going
talk about my wife like
at
Okay, so I actually we'll start off with Captain Marvel, shall we? And Captain Marvel, I actually saw this in the cinema. So it's the
Okay.
only one out of these. Well, I say the only one. Talk about two, but
The inferior viewing experience of seeing it in
yes,
the
the
cinema.
inferior one. Yeah. So yeah, Captain Marvel, which you didn't see before Endgame. So I don't know if you got confused or not.
No, I was just like, why has this pretty lady turned up all of a sudden? And
And
why is she a
what? Yeah,
badass?
why is she awesome at
Yeah,
everything?
why is she headbutting her way through a ship and things like that?
So I guess yeah, we won't go through it plot by a plot synopsis like we normally do. We'll just
No.
maybe just talk about it and things you liked.
Okay, so what was your overall impression then?
Well, I watched it again on the plane,
Yeah.
and I must admit, I enjoyed it more second time round. I don't think I was disappointed when I saw it in the cinema. I just was a little bit more underwhelmed compared
Yeah.
to the previous Marvel movies, because there was some really good stuff in it. But there's also little bits about Captain Marvel that I wasn't, too on board with. I'd say too on board with that just weren't that good in my mind. How about yourself?
I thought it was good. I actually wasn't massively impressed with Brie Larson. I thought she was a little bit wooden, actually.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I thought she was good, but I don't think she was at her best. She wasn't in Room. No, she wasn't like Room, though.
She hasn't got a child attached to her. But it was, I just thought she was, I don't know, like, she didn't really make it her own. Like, I guess my interpretation of wooden was amnesiac, but it was, I don't know. I quite like Jude Law in it. I thought he was a good bad guy, but you could see he was going to turn to be the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
From miles away. Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel Jackson was great.
Probably the best thing I've seen Samuel L. Jackson in ages.
Yeah. And his de-aging was really good as well, because
it looked quite natural. As opposed to some other ones where,
like, Coulson did not look natural.
No, Coulson looked like he'd had some kind of awful surgery.
Yeah, it was like Clark Gregg had gone out and had all the Botox.
Yes, yeah. So again, I wasn't hugely impressed with Brie Larson, which is no diss on her as an actress, because again, she's been awesome in other things before. Shout out Scott Pilgrim, great movie. But I just think, and actually I will say, Ben Mendelsohn.
I thought he was great.
I thought he was awesome.
It was really funny.
The surprise comic relief. That's what I liked. I liked the little bits that you weren't expecting. Because like I said, I kind of expected Jude Law. Sorry, I just touched you on the knee then.
I don't know why. It's fine.
Almost intentional. I thought Jude Law was, like, you could see the twist coming. I didn't see the twist that he was going to, Ben Mendelsohn was going to be.
No, I didn't see how the Skrulls were going to be there. No,
and all of a sudden turns into the comic relief.
Yeah.
Halfway through as well.
Yeah.
Which I think it needed that little bit of extra juice.
I'm quite glad, actually, because it would have been really tough, seeing as this movie was set in the 90s,
yeah,
to justify the inclusion of the Skrulls, because then that could have set up for all the other Marvel movies. It's like, well, actually, if they're the bad guys, who in all the other Marvel movies is a Skrull?
Mm.
Yeah, I'm glad that, like, because when you shape-shifting elements sometimes can, they can, that is a get out.
That's the thing.
Get out.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Deus Ex Machina for everything.
Yeah.
And I also think that with that, it also, it's a good, again, in Endgame, it's a good excuse for Brie Larson or Captain Marvel to not be anywhere else. Like, she's actually literally on the other side of the galaxy. And they mention it in Endgame, you know, there's hundreds of other worlds, or thousands of other worlds that she needs to sort out.
Yeah.
So they did that quite well. I really wasn't, well, the fact that it was set in the 90s, they did that in a very subtle way, Cam.
Oh, by yes.
Basically going through, okay, what were the top 10 biggest hits of the 90s? Let's play them.
It was a constant 90s fest.
Yeah.
It was like the Stranger Things of 90s movies, if that makes sense. Yeah, because Stranger Things is like 80s, 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 80s. This was like, at times I was like, oh, come on. Yeah, like, there were some funny jokes, like computers loading up. That's quite funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, like loading this and modems and dial-up internet. But the music choices for me were...
It was so on the nose.
So on the nose.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just a girl. And it's like, well...
That was actually... Again, so that fight scene was pretty good, with the exception of that song. Any other song would have been awesome. Like Man in the Box, or just any rock song. I don't know why I said Man in the Box. But any other rock song from the 90s would have worked.
I feel like with Guardians, the music they selected that is great, because they're not deep cuts.
No.
They're famous. They were famous songs for their time, but they're not songs you would necessarily think to use in the movie.
They're not all overplayed bangers. Which,
no, exactly. And
stereotypical,
like,
of that, of a certain era.
Why couldn't they just... maybe it's just because we're kids of the 90s, so we know all these songs, whereas like in Guardians, they're a little bit older, so we're like, oh, that's a really good song. It wasn't overplayed all the time.
That's actually a worrying thought, that there are some 18-year-olds like, oh, what is this old song? Just a Girl. I quite like this. I've never heard this
before.
Exactly. And we were like, God, again.
Off topic. I know we mentioned the wedding at the beginning of the podcast, but one of Becca's cousins, who's 17, he asked what their song was playing during a video we took. Because he's like, oh, because I really like it, and I won't check the band out anymore. Never heard it before. It was The Kooks and Naive.
Well, that age is...
God, almost crying.
God, we're old.
Crying as I sent the message to him. So that's right there, actually, because
did you also tell them to not listen to anything else by that band?
Because yeah, terrible. I was just play that album. The album is generally good, and then just stop there. They didn't do anything else.
Yeah, quit while you're ahead.
Yeah. So I guess that is a problem, but I feel like there were better songs from the 90s that could have gone in there.
Like I said,
and sometimes even the songs didn't fit up. Apparently, I didn't look into this, but people were saying that when it was set, some of the songs come out afterwards.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Yeah, like,
well, that just shows how lazy it was. They were just like literally generic 90s songs. It was like that people can recognize.
Gone onto Spotify and was like, search girls
90s playlist.
Yeah,
easy. Yeah,
yeah.
And it was So there's things like that I didn't like. Judging, and I know obviously the internet's just full of wankers. Some people might consider that we're part of that community. But the big backlash against how feminist it was and everything.
I didn't think, with the exception
of Just a Girl, actually, that song being played, I didn't think there was...
I don't think it was overtly feminist at all.
No, I didn't either.
I thought the only feminist thing was when... But it wasn't even feminist. It was when Jude Law's like, fight me, yo, don't use no powers. And she's like, no, fuck off.
Yeah,
and
but I didn't think that was a feminist thing. No, I thought that was a reference to Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Indiana Jones said it first, actually, so... But that's not a feminist thing, that's just her being
badass. If you're
18,
that's an old movie that's awesome.
Like, that was just her being like, why wouldn't I use my powers? Like, that's stupid, so...
Yeah.
I thought it was quite interesting. I didn't expect him to use the Tesseract.
No, I like how they brought that back in.
Yep.
I thought it fit very well within the MCU. I thought it was a decent movie, probably 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I'd be more generous. I'd maybe a mark or half a mark more than that. A little bit more generous, Dan.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I think just like a dick. I think it was like a 7.1. Yeah, it was. There were stuff to enjoy in it. For example, the best cat I've ever seen in any movie, the Flurkin, Goose.
Yeah,
I thought that was great, and what a great name for a cat as well.
Plus, reference to Top Gun, all about that. I did like the way that's how. Spoilers, obviously. That's how Nick Fury loses his eye.
That's hilarious.
I love the anticlimax of it.
Yep.
Wasn't some epic, you know, like he saved someone or anything like that. Just got his eye scratched by a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were funny moments, like when they both lift up the hospital gown of the Skrull just to have a look and see what they're like, whoa. But then again, if you're a shapeshifter, why wouldn't you just constantly shapeshift your gentleman's agreement to whatever you want it to be?
Improved balance.
Yeah, like, sir, you could have any bigger, you would have balance problems.
Why is he leaning forward all the time? All the scrolls lean forward.
Yeah. Oh, those scrolls are tripods. Oh no. Yeah, the Stan Lee cameo, great, because it was
quite
Kevin
poignant.
Smith,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. One of the other things which I was thinking about last night when not in preparation for recording this was that the post-credit scene leading up to Endgame doesn't make any sense anymore.
Okay.
Because, in the post-credit scene, did you watch it?
Yeah.
So the...
Cam, I was on a plane for 14 hours.
The pager goes off.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, something's happening. And then suddenly Captain Marvel's there.
Yeah.
But in Endgame, she turns up with Iron Man. But in my head, the way I squared it off, actually, was that perhaps she went to Earth first, asked where Fury was, found out what's happening, and then they told her to go and find Nebula and Iron Man, and she brings them back, and that's how she knows where to find them.
Yeah. Well, bearing in mind how little impact she actually has on Endgame, like they pretty much give her a get out of jail free card right at the start, don't they, with the whole, there's thousands of other worlds to protect, things like that. She has pretty minimal impact on the outcome of everything. I did think it was a little bit shoehorned in.
Well, I think she filmed her... I read somewhere that they filmed the
Having just said
Endgame.
That I thought that it fits in with the MCU really well.
Yeah.
I do think that, I mean, in terms of the origin story of it and as a whole, I think it fits in really well. I don't think her character fits into Endgame.
Well, I think, like I was saying, they filmed Endgame before Captain Marvel, I think.
Oh, because there was like a 2.5 year production.
Yeah, that's what I heard somewhere. So obviously there were like, things were pretty much locked down by that stage. Yeah.
And I guess if they were going to release Captain Marvel afterwards, everyone would be like, well, if she's one of these really powerful people, why didn't she influence Endgame? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so I understand that, but
yeah. So all in all, Dan gives it a 7, I'll give it a 7.1. just 0.1 better. Yeah, so that was one of the MCU's offerings this year.
Yeah.
And now, really, let's move on to one of the DC offerings, because we haven't seen, well, I haven't seen Shazam yet.
I haven't seen Shazam either. Actually.
So we have to go on another long haul flight.
Yeah, we will.
So let's talk about Aquaman.
So Aquaman, I had pretty minimal expectations because it's Aquaman. As much as I love Jason Momoa, he's a shiny building of a man. But this was just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Literally what the fuck? Like, it's just, I can't explain anything that happens in it. Or why anything happens in
it. It's so mental.
Is this supposed to be set after...
Yeah, this is set after Justice League.
Right, okay.
Because Amber Heard...
No, but he kind of... But when he's introduced to it, they act like they've never met. Maybe it's just the acting or the script or something, but they act like they've literally never met.
The acting in Aquaman, apart from Tamura Morrison, who is a legend,
yeah, he is.
And Momoa, is pretty... average.
Yeah. Actually, I'll say Tamura Morrison was handpicked by Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
I think he wanted more of a Polynesian influence, obviously.
Yeah.
And he apparently he got the role by doing a hacker as well.
Oh, really?
That's Jason Momoa, not Tamura
Morrison. Oh, Jason Momoa did a hacker.
Jason Momoa did, yeah.
Yeah, but he's not a Kiwi, though. He's Polynesian.
I think he just claimed it. You can culturally appropriate things like that if you're
Yeah,
brown.
Yeah. Well, but when me and you go and do the bloody hacker, we get people to...
I don't know. When I try and speak to Rio Mari, I get laughed at.
it's just mental. Like, when they said that at the beginning, I don't know if it was the beginning, how they got split into 5 different factions or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so you meet 2 of the factions and they're human looking. And then you go and there's suddenly the crab people.
Any movie with crab people is going to get a win in my book.
The, like... crazy demon type things.
Oh, the subterranean ones that are like... Yeah.
And then the fish people, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
How come you guys are basically humans, but you guys aren't? And
yeah, it's, again, but it's batshit. It makes no sense. And this whole movie, I mean, we're not going to probably do this in a linear way, but the movie kind of like ambles along, and then, I'm just pointing it out there, gives us one of the most unexpected and best battle scenes I've seen in ages. It's like a Helm's Deep level of battle scene right at the end with where all of the creatures of the sea just fight each other and they have this massive 5-way, you know, all the different groups and stuff like that. I just thought it was like bizarrely epic because I wasn't expecting it as well. And it's a like 2.5-hour long movie as well.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you get 2.5 hours out of this? I thought that about half an hour in.
I thought this
is so thin on plot or so thin on everything other than special effects, which I will say are fantastic. I didn't understand how, like, where it was going to go, and then the last 40 minutes of this huge epic battle.
I'd say that was a pretty big issue watching it on a plane.
Yeah,
especially because for some reason we watched it on the worst plane we had. So in all the other flights, it was quite big TV screens.
Yeah.
But one of the flights from Singapore to London, it was quite an old plane, so the TV screen was there good. So at the end, I was like...
It wasn't one of those fold-down screens, was it?
No, I was just like, what's going on? There's like a shark attacking a seahorse.
I imagine watching that on a small screen would have just been like watching like just a billion lights.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's
like
just
an epileptic nightmare.
But there's also another movie about the guy who Aquaman doesn't save his dad.
Yeah.
At the beginning, which was a little bit of a dick move.
Also, one of the funniest costumes ever.
Yeah.
That looks so shit.
Yeah.
That looked like something out of 1960s Doctor Who.
But it's very comic book inspired.
It is. And I know a lot of the fans were like, oh, it's actually his helmet from the comics and things like that.
Is it Black Manta?
Black
is
Manta,
his name?
Yeah. But it looks awful.
All that went on and that got resolved. I think that got resolved like halfway through. But another good action scene.
It is. He must have about 4 minutes of screen time. Yeah. Oh, actually, and I will say that DC have done something that it happens in the comics quite a bit, and it certainly happened in Endgame with the depowering of superheroes.
Yeah.
So when Aquaman's underwater fighting everyone, he's awesome and he's uber powerful, things like that. A guy in what is basically a shit jetpack suit, a shit Iron Man suit, can fight him, and he keeps on owning him.
His neck must be killing him because that helmet looks like it weighs about 40 kilograms.
Speaking of balance problems.
Yeah. It's just like...
He's okay. Walking around like a baby.
Don't touch me.
Head forward, not bending at the knee.
Oh, like, you just see him go over like, just like flick him on the forehead and his like weight on his head would just knock him backwards.
Yeah. It was, yes, it's a bit uneven, shall we say. But that guy, I can't remember the name of the actor, but he must have all of about 4 minutes of screen time and he does his best with what he's given.
Yeah,
I reckon he was sold, you're going to be like the second bad guy, but you're going to have quite a prominent role. And I reckon a lot of it was just cut out because he really has been dropped in for no actual reason.
Like, in a way, I think he had a bit of a case. Like, it doesn't matter if a guy tries to kill you or not, bad guy and all that. Like, Aquaman should have saved his dad at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And I guess that's part of Aquaman's learning.
Yeah.
Is that, you do have to...
It's a little bit of a Killmonger situation with Black Panther.
Yeah.
But that's how you do a bad guy that wants revenge. You know, you actually you humanize him a bit.
Killmonger was infinitely better than this guy, though.
Yeah, literally infinitely better. Yeah. Yeah. I'd also like to shout out Dolph Lundgren.
Oh yeah, Dolph Lundgren was in it.
Randomly,
crazy.
Yeah. And it was kind of like that guy looks kind of familiar. And then eventually I realized, oh, it's him with the worst dye job I've ever seen. And who else was in it that was pretty good? Again, did not realize Nicole Kidman was in it.
Nicole Kidman and.
But again, she was just kind of dropped in and then dropped back out again.
The guy who played the Green Goblin, isn't it?
Oh, Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe's in it.
Yeah.
Willem
Dafoe in the fuck up. It was awesome.
So it wasn't just movies that have come out this year.
No.
There was another couple of TV shows that we probably would have talked about if we got our asses in gear.
Yeah.
So let's start off with the latest series of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, now Star Trek Discovery, the first season was it was a little bit uneven, I'd say.
Yep.
I certainly enjoyed it, but it was more like Star Wars. I think that was the consensus, wasn't it? It was like Star Wars as Star Trek.
Yeah, it was a good TV series, but it wasn't a Star Trek series.
Yeah. And this series, I think they tried to remedy that by putting in some deep cuts from the original series.
Yeah, it's much
like
more
that.
Star Trek-y. That's because you actually see the Enterprise and the suits look like the Enterprise
and
the original series.
And they retconned a lot of the technology as well.
Yeah, like get rid of those holo emitters and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say, all the old stuff they did, all the references to TOS, I really enjoyed. I actually thought young Spock was really good.
He was good.
I thought Ethan Peck was awesome.
Anson
Mount was quality.
He was quality, yeah.
Now, but at the start, kind of like the weird uncle who kind of is like, hey, buddy, and just like wants to be everyone's friend. And I was like, this is kind of a weak captain. But as it goes on, you realise that he's not like that. He's actually just a genuinely good guy. And you do start to really like him at the end. There's actually some talk of him getting his own spin-off as well.
Well, yeah. I actually enjoyed his stuff and Spock probably the most.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the series... It was good, and there were some awesome moments in each episode, but there was no good episodes, was there? Well, no great episodes.
Would you say it's even more uneven than the first?
Yeah, definitely. It's...
Well, I think the first season had good episodes and bad episodes, whereas this one, every episode had good and bad bits in it.
There were some really weird choices they made as well. Like, the episode where they go to Saru's homeworld.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, the Ba'ul are tar monsters. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, if they had to be tar monsters, surely the, what's their Orsi species name? Species, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Oh, Kelpian. That's
yeah, Kelpians. Just go where there's no tar. Yeah, like, and how are they making all this technology?
Yeah.
Like, this super gleaming metal technology. If they're tar monsters.
Tar can't go in the sea.
Well, it's just
they're
weird.
They're Kelpian, live in the
like,
sea.
They were just like, oh man, this monster looks really cool. They just, it...
There was no logic behind it.
There was no
which
thinking.
Is ironic considering they brought Spock into it.
And then suddenly Saru's shooting bloody daggers from his face.
But even the Spock stuff, so he gets, again, we are going to jump around a little bit with the chronology of the series, but the bit when he's hidden for the first few episodes and he's been accused of murdering some people. And then it's like, nope, it turns out they've actually faked this footage. And then they're like, oh, it's been faked. Like, oh, okay, fine. But if they've been able to fake the footage like that, then they can use that kind of thing for absolutely... That's got massive ramifications for absolutely everything in that universe. If they can fake footage that well.
Yeah.
Not even reference.
But then there's also
on.
The bit where, like, they go to the space station and Control's in charge.
Yeah.
And, like, Suri's like, that woman is lying because her face didn't flush.
Yeah.
Or, like, I couldn't read the UV.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't do that from a bloody video anyway, mate. You know? It's a video.
It's like they had idea dartboard and were just like, okay, here's 7 darts. Okay, yep, they all work. Let's go. Let's go and film that without actually following up on anything that they've actually
referenced.
There's
7 signals at the beginning.
Yeah.
But what happened, like...
And then at the end, they're kind of scrambling to, like, fit reasons in why they do that.
Yeah.
Also, the whole 7 signals thing. At the start, they know the location of the signals. Why? And again, at the end, they're like, oh, if you get to the other side of the wormhole, send a signal. And then they wait, like, 127 days or whatever it is, and then there's a signal. It's like, you already know there's going to be some signals.
Yeah.
Later on. You know it's predestined that they get through. It's mentioned in, like, the second episode. There's no logic to it. But having said that, the fight scenes are pretty good.
Yeah, the fight scenes are great, apart from the bit at the end when the Kelpians are like, we could pilot ships now. We saw Battlefield Earth.
This subjugated slave race, who apparently live in, like, primitive beach huts and things like that, also awesome at space fighting.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. There's no
I don't abandon it too much, but I did enjoy the things. There were parts I enjoyed. But it's so earnest. And it's so, like, the beginnings where they're, like, they're not doing Captain Zog. It's, like, minus thing. And then, surely life is like a flower, but then flowers could be, oh, sharp! And just...
Shut up and shoot someone! have a moral dilemma and actually solve it. And
just tell me, I just wish they'd, like, Captain's Log, we are going to do this, this, and this. That's what's so good about Star Trek.
Yeah, it's so simple. It's so simple to set it up. And in this one, they don't do any of that. They don't really set things up and then follow through with it. There's characters that they just seem to have forgotten about. Like, Stamets has a really poor arc, in my opinion.
Oh, terrible. And they forget about Tilly.
Tilly just disappears at one point.
Yeah, halfway through. When Arium, God, that...
Arium. Now, God, that the scene... most... I actually quite... See, no, I like that. I thought, again, the most heartfelt moment of the entire show, or the entire season, was a character that is introduced and dies in one episode. And it's so unearned. And they pull out all the strings to try and, like, make you feel something. And it works.
But... It doesn't work at all, mate. I'm sorry. I totally disagree with you.
Why?
Literally, like, she's been Robot Lady. She didn't even have a bloody name in the first series.
That's what I mean. Like, they pull out all the strings to try and... Try and make you feel something for her.
But why didn't they do that throughout the, like...
No, why don't they actually build up her character previously so that you're invested in it?
Well, they should have done, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Is that it's like an artificial...
Oh, but then, like, you said you felt something, though.
Yeah, but it's so like it an worked. Artificial thing. Oh, okay. Yeah, because all the strings and the slow motion and the look to the camera and the, oh my God, it's so emotional. That kind of thing. But it's insincere.
Yeah.
Because it's this character that has been, like, generated and killed in one episode, essentially.
And when she... Like, the next episode, when it's her funeral, oh, God, it made me so mad. They're all...
Star Trek, in general, does not do funerals well.
No, but, like, okay, so, like, yeah, Tashi Oswalt, that was terrible. And, like, I can't remember even if Dax had a funeral. She must have done.
Her death was crap, anyway.
Yeah, her death was crap, because Worf should have, like, screamed to the sky.
Yeah, and he just looks at her stony face, like, oh, this is mildly troubling.
But at the beginning of the next episode, when they're all at the funeral and they're all rubbing their own nipples as they are saying these words, they're like, I'm going to outgrief you. I'm saying this really sincere stuff. It's like, have you ever been to a funeral?
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone doesn't get turns and says, like, all this amazing, like, lines and stuff they thought about. They're horrible. And if it's your mate, you're going to be like, I really miss her. She was the best. And then I wouldn't be able to stand up and be like...
I used to hack her hard drive and store porn
I believe it was Robert Louis Stevenson who said that life is one of the most precious things. And what's really good is that she...
Robert Louis Stevenson?
I don't know. I'm just... Someone's come up with an author name. Yeah. Oh, it was like...
I believe it was Dan Brown who first said...
Just stupid. Just stupid. Weak.
stupid Tilly. Also, the most unrealistic thing... This is a bit mean, but the most unrealistic thing in the entire show was that she beat everyone in a marathon.
Why is it a half marathon? It's like, you know what the writers say, they're like, what's the distance of race? Someone's like, half marathon. Okay, cool. Yeah. And it's like,
just, why didn't they just make it a 10K?
Yeah, or 5K. And it would have been yeah. like, do two laps of the ship. That's 5K. Yeah, maybe I could imagine discos that big that yeah. maybe the saucer section's maybe like a K, 2K in circumference.
Yeah. They also don't show the scale of the ship very consistently.
No.
In this one as well, because the massive, massive battle scene at the end, which is done really well. Speaking of like billions of little lights,
yeah.
that's done quite well. But it is very Star Warsy. Speaking of that, they apparently can release a bunch of drones as well.
Oh yeah,
and
oh yeah, here's a thousand ships.
Here's this science ship that's also a massive. I mean, they go on in the first season about how it's a science vessel. That's what it's for. And yeah, it's also a complete badass in battle and has all these drones that can. I suppose you could say that they've been retrofitted. Science drones or, you know, probes or anything like that. But still, it's a bit like, it really holds its own in this massive battle, and you think that if it's a science vessel, it's not going to have all these massive cannons and phasers and things like that.
So let's, before we get too mad, let's talk about the positives. I think one of the main positives is Sonequa Martin-Green,
yeah.
who is acting her nuts off.
With a capital A
yeah.
and capital N for nuts.
She's awesome.
She is. She's, I mentioned this earlier, she's like acting 10 out of 10 in a 6 out of 10 show.
Yeah. She's like Patrick Stewart
really?
Levels of acting.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. There are four lights level of acting
yeah.
in almost every episode.
Yeah,
but she's really giving it the beans, and I just don't think the story justifies it.
I don't know if it's the story. Maybe it's the writing that doesn't justify it.
But, do you mean like the script, like the dialogue?
Yeah, I think that she's much better than what they give her.
Yeah, I mean, she does try and wring every drop of emotion out of it, but it just seems to, again, it's a bit unearned. You know,
and we talked about how good Anson Mount was and how good even Peck was at Spock. I've quite enjoyed the Klingon stuff this time.
Yeah, I did as well.
That massive Klingon cleave ship, that was badass.
That was pretty cool, yeah. Also, just calling it a cleave ship.
Yeah.
What does it do? Cleave shit.
Yeah. But I guess overall, like, on the grand scheme of things, because everyone knows we oh.
I'm also still kind of getting over the whole, Kalish!
Kalish!
Talk like this all the time. They sound like old men. They put their fucking teeth in.
To go to
the Time Crystal episode as well. Randomly. So Ash Tyler has a baby. Well, him and what's the name? Laurel?
Yep.
Have a baby. A secret baby, which isn't mentioned in the first season, who then is kind of within one episode like shipped off to like a secret planet and then comes back as an adult because it's the Time Crystal planet.
It's
just like, what?
The,
so again, all these ideas are just thrown out there, and then
the whole time travel thing doesn't make any sense as well. Like, if they killed Control,
yeah,
why are they going to the future? They don't need.
Yeah.
So I guess what we're saying
is
it's enjoyable.
The control, yeah, but in spite of all these many, many, many things, it is quite enjoyable.
For me though, it's definitely the worst Trek.
Really?
Yeah. Come round
really?
To Enterprise. Yeah.
I haven't seen Enterprise yet.
Yeah.
Okay, there are certain seasons of Voyager, though, that are pretty bad.
There are, sir, but you're invested more in the characters, even though quite a lot of the Voyager characters are a bit
dickish. It's worse Trek. You're saying it's worse than Code of Honor?
Well, I guess as a whole, if you take it as
of course,
the series.
You don't see Code of Honor as racist, so you don't see the problem with it.
If you do TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, Disco... Or the original series, but I haven't seen any much of the original series.
Hmm.
I just don't enjoy it as much as the modern ones.
Yeah.
Modern being, you know, like TNG, even though that's not too modern.
There's episodes of every Star Trek series, let's face it. Star Trek is quite a up and down
show. Oh yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying as a whole.
But in general, yeah. I'd say in general, there's more episodes. So bearing in mind it's only a 13 or 14 episode season for Disco. I do find myself looking at clock watching.
Don't they go to the tried and tested formula of all Star Trek is you have a captain and then you have five or six people who you do stories about
yeah.
a week.
But it's so weird, like... Oh, can we actually talk about... There's one more criticism.
Okay.
I don't understand what Giorgio's character is for.
No, she changed.
She's kind of like Chaos Bro, but like doesn't... Yeah, I don't understand what she's for.
And one more thing as well. Do you remember when Pike was saying his goodbyes? And
yeah.
he was like, Saru, you're the best. You know, like, yeah. Michael Burnham, I missed you. you are also here as well. And like, and,
hey, guy.
Hey, you. You've been on these.
Oh. Remember that time when...
Oh, I've got to go now. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. My ship's here. See ya. Yeah, but I'd happily see a Captain Pike spin-off.
Yeah. I wonder if this guy's going to be set in the future.
It is, apparently.
The new series.
Yeah, they've confirmed it's going to be set 900 years in the future, which might be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be cool.
And you don't have to have it as, you know, some season long overarching narrative, because they're clearly not good at it.
But it worked. It worked in like DS9, but that was great.
Yeah, but that was when they had 24 episodes, and even then they had, you know, the little bottle episodes.
Exactly,
in between.
Exactly. These bottle episodes weren't bottle episodes, were they?
No.
Sorry.
Well, the only one I can really think of is the Saru episode, or maybe the Aram episode.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, that's
what would you give it out of 10?
I don't know, 6?
I'm going to give it 6.1.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to something...
Something uncontroversial.
Uncontroversial.
Definitely consistent.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Now, so as everyone knows, last series of Game of Thrones this year. I'm a die-in-the-wall Game of Thrones fan. Watched it since the beginning. Like, read all the books.
Yeah, me too.
What is your overall impression of Series 8?
It wasn't
a great sound.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. I do think a lot of the criticism is quite unjustified. So we'll start at the top with the big twist, with Daenerys turns into the villain, yep. Basically. Now everyone on the internet, because again the internet's full of wankers, was like, "This is so unearned. It's out of the blue." And if you actually watch the series, it's not out of the blue. What they didn't do well was set it up in this season. It's set throughout season, from season 1 to, what was the last season, 8?
Yep.
Season 1 to 8, that is consistent with her arc. She always is talked down from doing something drastic and horrible. So she ends up, like, just case in point, she crucifies people at one point against the wishes of her advisors. She burns a bunch of people to death. She does all this horrible shit.
She allows her brother get molten gold poured on his head.
Yeah, which is kind of cool, but yeah, still... It was, yeah, she does all this brutal shit throughout, and it's always her advisors who are, like, talking her back off the edge and things like that. And in this season, her best friend and closest advisor is killed.
Mm-hmm.
Her protector is killed. She believes that her right hand, Tyrion, has betrayed her, and she thinks that, and her lover, the guy that she's in love with, has betrayed her as well. She's a woman on the edge. And I will say that I've been known to criticise Emilia Clarke, actually, for being a bit inconsistent with her acting. But I thought in season 8 she absolutely nailed it. I thought she was brilliant and she sold it really, really well.
Yeah, totally agree. That last episode when she's talking to her troops,
yeah,
and how she's like, "We're not just going to stop at King's Landing."
Yeah. And, and she's full on Tyrion. And she becomes the dragon as well. And there's that awesome shot of the dragon, of Drogon's wings, like, unfurling behind her as she's walking out. And we should say at the outset, actually, the cinematography has been absolutely outstanding.
Stunning.
With the exception of the fact that it was very dark in the Battle of Winterfell.
Yeah, and they did definitely went for an aesthetic there. It was like, it was...
I think it was intentionally so. Yeah, yeah,
it was intentionally so. And I guess if you watched it on a normal TV,
yeah,
I think it would have been fine. However, a lot of people watch their stuff through streaming services now.
Yeah.
I know I did, yeah, over here. And I think when you get streaming, sometimes it just doesn't... It's not as they intend, is it?
It's not as crisp, no.
It's not as crisp.
Yeah, I do think it was an aesthetic, and I think it's a good metaphor for, you know, the encroaching dark of this, you know, unknown enemy, that kind of thing, which worked well.
But at the same time, the Battle of Winterfell was... I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
But they also, like, how did Jaime and Brienne and Gendry survive when...
And,
you saw them.
And Sam as well. There's a bit where Sam has one White Walker, like, he's like holding on to one of them that's trying to hurt him. He stabs another one, and I think he's crying or he's shouting or something like that. And he's like, "Oh shit, Sam's about to die." And that works because you're following Jon, and Jon's is running towards the White Walker to the Night King, and that works if Jon has to walk past his best friend to try and get to the Night King, and then he still can't get to the Night King. Like, he's sacrificed his best friend to get to it. And, but there's no payoff for that. Again, no. It's all about payoff, and there's no payoff. And so, no, Sam's alive. And what else does he do in that season? Nothing.
No.
literally nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, he becomes an advisor at the end, but there's no reason for that. There's no reason for, I don't know. There's a lot of plot holes in it.
Speaking of the end.
Yeah, go on.
What do you think of the ending? I guess that's one of my, looking back, not this, I guess it would be disappointment. It's like, who the fuck wants Bran as a king?
Yeah, no, I will say...
Like, emo kid, I'm going to my room to listen to My Chemical Romance. They haven't been invented yet, but I can see in the future, and they're really cool.
There's a lot of... Well, I certainly didn't see it coming.
No.
I don't think anyone did. It's, again, another thing that's quite unearned. He mentions that he doesn't want to be Lord of Winterfell. I don't really want anymore. And it's like, oh, okay. Cool, he doesn't want anything anymore. He's now the Three-Eyed Raven, he's above it.
My dick doesn't work. Thanks for pointing that out again, Sansa.
I beat it senselessly and nothing happens. I'm bruised from the waist down. And he basically goes to... At the end, he gets offered the kingship and he's like, why do you think I'm here? And he's like, what the fuck? So you don't want anything anymore, but when you get offered the chance of being king, you're like, fuck yeah, I'll be king. It's really... That is a bit of an out-of-character moment.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And that is totally unearned. And his character as a whole, I think I've mentioned this possibly on this podcast, but certainly when I've been drunk to all of my friends, that Bran as a character is quite frustrating because I think George R. R. Martin had like plot point A, B and C that he wanted to hit when he first started writing that. He knew that Bran was going to be disabled. He was going to go on this journey. It's a typical fantasy trope, you know, go on the journey, get this power and something was going to happen. So he had like point A to D that he wanted to hit. And then this massive world unfurled around it. And he was like, ah, well, those plot points still have to be hit. But there's this huge world around. So now Bran's character gets thinned out over the course of books and series. And he's not an exciting character anymore. So maybe if it wouldn't feel as much of a left turn if it happened, if his character was thicker, if you know what I mean, if there was more weight to the character.
Yeah, so that's one of the points I want to talk to you about. There's a really interesting theory about why people think Game of Thrones went downhill after the books, after they didn't have the books to draw on anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because, so apparently there are two, I might get some of the specifics wrong, but there's kind of two types of writing. So you either write about characters or you write about plots. And George R. R. Martin was awesome at building all these characters.
Yeah.
And like making them really nuanced and you heavily invest in them. But as his world grew, he couldn't control the plot anymore. And he was just like, oh, this character, until he's got this huge beast of a sprawling epic. And you really know all the characters, but there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Now, what Benioff and Weiss had, they could pick and choose different parts. Mm-hmm. And they could, oh, I don't really like that character. Like Lady Stoneheart, we don't really need her. They could combine characters. They could pick out different parts.
They could drive the narrative by the plot rather than by the character.
Well, yeah, use the characters to drive the plot, and they had the plot to go to.
Yeah.
But then once the books finished, they didn't have the characters written anymore, but they had the plot, and then they started to try and fit the characters to the plot rather than the plot to the characters.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So they knew at the end, they were like, right, we're going to have Danny doing this. We're going to do this. And we're going to have this. And so they have to like write the characters to fit the plot in that way. And that's why some people think that it wasn't. It's called, apparently that's called fly by your seat writing.
Yeah.
So you're flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, it's similar to, in a lot of creative writing courses, they teach the difference between showing and telling.
Okay.
And if you're driving the narrative just by plot, like a James Bond story.
Yeah.
James Bond never changes. His character is, his character is unchanging. You know what you're going to get. And it's, okay, he's got to go here, he's got to go here, he's got to go here, and he's got to go here. That's the plot driving it. And you're telling the audience what's going to happen. Okay, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. If you're showing the audience what's going to happen, that's when it becomes character-driven. So what would Tyrion do in that situation? What would Daenerys do in that situation? And that's what drives the plot.
Mm.
And I think because it was bizarrely rushed, like apparently even HBO gave them the option to extend it to like, 9 episodes or 10 episodes, and they said no, 6 will do.
We're going to Star Wars, sorry.
And it was needlessly rushed. That's my main criticism. And because they were telling the audience what was happening rather than letting them show it, or having the space to show what was going to happen or why it's happening. That's where I think a lot of it fell down. Having said that and having bagged on it a little bit, I will say there were some seriously good bits in this season.
Oh, amazing.
The episode before Winterfell, like the calm before the storm,
yeah,
probably the best episode of the whole season.
Yep. The moment when Arya killed the Night King, though,
yep,
you can say, oh, how'd you get all that? But that's one of the, it's a stand off the your seat moment. Yeah, like I was only sitting in a chair and I was up and I was like, no way! Yeah. It was that good. I loved it. I thought that was great.
Yeah. There's things like
the Hound, Clegane Bowl, sorry.
Clegane Bowl,
I quite enjoyed that, to be honest. See, like,
when I first watched that, I didn't like it. I thought it was a bit anticlimactic. But then looking back, I like the symbolism of it. Like, he can't kill this beast that's been dogging him for years and years and years. Not that kind of dogging cam. I know that look in your eye. Apart from to confront his fear and to throw him into the fire.
Yep.
Which he's been scared of the entire time since he was a kid because of his brother.
Yeah.
So the symbolism there is quite nice. Like I said, the cinematography in general has been outstanding, as has the music. The music throughout all of Game of Thrones is quality.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that have been done right. But ultimately, I just think it was really, really rushed.
Well, I think we've done a while then. We've got four major things ticked off in the time it's taken us to normally do one episode.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
I'm impressed.
So what's coming up next? I think we'll maybe try and record an episode after Spider-Man. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for The Outer Colonies.
And you can find us at Podomatic and on Twitter at @outer_colonies.
Guess that's it. So just as I say, thanks for listening. My name's Cam.
And I've been Dan. Thanks guys. Thanks.